Welcome to another special episode of DevOps Dimension. We're recording in DevOps Days London, and I am joined by Chris Saxon. Chris, thank you very much for joining me. Why don't you introduce yourself?
Well, thanks very much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here. My name is Chris Saxton. I'm the founder of Automation Logic, a specialist consultancy that focuses on helping large enterprises engage on large projects like private cloud adoption, private cloud building, public cloud adoption, and legacy migration.
You just delivered a session, great session titled Bimodal IT and Other Snake Oil. Interesting choice of words, I guess.
Yeah, thank you. Slightly provocative. I think I could have gone further and described it as cultural poison. Mm-hmm. But snake oil. At best, it's snake oil in that it doesn't solve the problem it sets out to.
So let's start with the very basics. What is bimodal IT?
So bimodal IT was first coined by Gartner in 2014. Mm-hmm. It is a method of classifying modes of IT delivery into two broad forms. You've got mode one, which are your critical systems, which are focused on stability and avoiding risk. Mm-hmm. So these are your systems of record, things like your subscriber databases, the kind of crown jewels of your organization. Mm-hmm. And then you have mode two, which are systems focused on agility. So these are new products, digital services, things which are actively and directly engaging with your users. And the idea is that if you try and manage them all as one, you kill your agility because they get drowned in the kind of processes that you've put in place to protect all of your critical systems. But I think that's a bad idea.
Yeah, I guess you disagree.
Yeah.
And what's the reason behind that?
Well, there's three reasons, really. There's two which are what I think to be internal inconsistencies in the whole idea behind bimodal IT. So the very two things that it sets out to do, which is promote stability and reduce risk in your mode one systems, I think it fails at that. I'll say why in a sec. And also the agility in the kind of mode two world, if you like, is a sort of false agility. It's short-lived. But the main reason why I think bimodal IT is problematic is for cultural reasons, in that it creates a them and us within your organization. Mm-hmm. And when we recognize widely within the DevOps community that one of the main issues we face are those around culture, why are we creating sort of strategic devices or strategies around IT which build walls between people?
Mm-hmm. So you're saying it's basically creating an internal competition between teams, and they are blocking them from collaborating with each other because they are, you know, separated into different modes.
Yeah, more or less. I mean, the basic idea is that we shape our institutions and thereafter they shape us. Mm-hmm. So by drawing circles around certain groups of people and saying you're this type of person and you're that type of person, that leads to all kinds of sort of negative and corrosive behavior. Mm-hmm. One side or the other, generally, although Gartner themselves don't do this, they actually frame it as, say, marathon runners and sprinters. Mm-hmm. If you look around on the internet and also our personal experience of delivering these kind of projects, one side starts to use kind of pejorative language mm-hmm. against the other. So it's like old and new, legacy and shiny, happy and sad, Bridget, who's one of the other presenters, that's a nice term. And the tendency is that everybody wants to be in the mode two world. Mm-hmm. And actually what we need to be doing is bringing these two worlds together, because neither can succeed without the other.
Yeah, because if it's a large enterprise, there is some legacy environment. It's inevitable.
It's not just that there's some. If you look at the relative size of a traditional enterprise or those two modes, from our experience, large enterprises are still at the beginning of this kind of journey. So the actual kind of live services that are developed in this mode, if you like, are in the sort of, you know, single digit percent. So most of IT in large enterprises is still in this mode one world.
Mm-hmm. And as far as I know, you were in some projects about this. So what were the main and common pain points about this company situation?
So many. It's difficult to list them. But some of the main things that you see which sort of scupper efforts for those two teams, two modes, if you like, to work together, and that's even without people framing it and espousing it as a strategy, are lack of sponsorship from senior leadership. Mm-hmm. So you can get so far as a grassroots movement, but at some point you need a sort of senior management blessing, if you like, to set the vision for the entire organization to say, this is urgent and this needs to happen now. And without that, you are prone to those with a vested interest in not accelerating change, or also those that feel sort of quite fearful of it, in starting to throw up blockers. And bimodal IT is starting to become one of the things that people quote when they dig in.
Even the technical teams like developers and IT operations agree with the problem, unless they have the blessing and the support from the management. It's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen, yeah. I mean, you see it, it can appear spontaneously. And if you're working within, let's say, a small product or service that's largely isolated, then you can have success. Mm-hmm. But in my experience, within an organization of you know, non-trivial size, no product or service works in isolation. So as soon as you have interdependencies between services, then you start having the potential for one to slow down the other.
Mm-hmm. For an organization like this, what would be the first step to work on this situation?
Well, for me, the strategy is to tackle the problem head on. So if it's a cultural problem, then start with a cultural solution. It comes from Mo2 world, if you like, from the agile world, and particularly from the sort of teams that were pioneered in the likes of Amazon and Netflix when building microservices. But these small multidisciplinary teams, I think that literally removes cultural barriers, in that you have a single team which is focused around a product or a service, and that team draws from people in all parts of the organization. So not just IT, not just mode one and mode two, but also you'd have product managers and delivery managers and user researchers and people from security, people even from the commercial side and the business side of the organization, all working together with a single goal, which is bringing value to the users of these services. Mm-hmm. And the simple act of doing that, even if you don't use Agile within those teams, and we have worked in teams where we don't, because we have high levels of certainty and prefer a waterfall approach, or even within services which are wrapped in heavy ITIL processes, we can still make that work if you start with a cultural model which promotes collaboration.
Mm-hmm. You also mentioned you're working on private cloud. One common theme I see in our customers, when we start to have a conversation about DevOps, they're like, no, we're not using the cloud. We're not using the public cloud. Mm. And we're like, you don't have to be using public cloud. Even if you're using a private cloud, you could, you know, implement these principles. Do you also have
Absolutely.
Any ideas around this?
Well, my ideas around cloud have sort of changed slightly, even over the last few months. I think initially, if we take public cloud, the many objections around public cloud within large organizations, particularly when financial services or other heavily regulated industries, are around things like security and compliance, as well as the sort of basic fears around resilience. Mm-hmm. But I was at a public cloud conference in February, I think it was, and a realization is kind of dawning that happened during that conference when I looked at the quality and the amount of security tools that the public cloud vendors are now offering developers and delivery teams, combined with the levels of resilience that you could achieve if you architect your app to take advantage of that. And the realization was that public cloud now represents the lowest risk option for hosting. And in the past, my thinking was probably that it would have been private cloud. Mm-hmm. So now my thinking is public cloud by default. And you might have some special cases that still warrant hosting on a private cloud, and you can certainly take advantage of all of these techniques when deploying onto a private cloud. The arguments sort of become really of why would you build it when there's one that's already there and is probably better than you could ever hope to build yourself, given the amount of expertise and resources available to you.
And also this hybrid cloud scenario is, I think, becoming more valuable, because you may have some internal projects that you don't want to put in the public cloud, be it regulation or laziness, whatever.
Yeah.
And you can just, you know, combine the private cloud with the public cloud, and you can just keep implementing this DevOps principles, I guess.
I guess that's valid if you already have a private cloud, as in you've built it already. But personally, what I would recommend and what I see people more willing to do is, you've essentially got two choices. You either undergo the effort and expense and risk of building your own private cloud, or you undergo the efforts to understand the spirit behind most of the regulation and compliance that hits, say, the financial industry, and work on reinterpreting that such that you can use the public cloud. Mm-hmm. So going through whatever validation exercise with your risk teams, which we've done successfully with several customers, it is long and painful, but I now think that is less painful than building a private cloud and mm-hmm. sort of pretending that you're safe because you have the keys and your app is in this sort of layered fortress. Yeah. With more than 70% of service attacks coming at the application level now, you can't assume that just because you've got a sort of protected infrastructure that your service is safe. Mm-hmm. You need to go through the discipline of securing your app, your service, no matter what environment mm-hmm. that it's running on.
Mm-hmm. That's great, thank you. So finally, any recommendations about resources? People, you know, curious about how can I learn more about implementing DevOps principles in my company?
Yeah, there's some great reading out there. Initially, when I wrote my synopsis for the talk that I just gave mm-hmm. on bimodal IT, I couldn't find sort of anything on the internet, one or two blog posts, so sort of slightly nervous that I was setting myself up against the status quo. But then a couple of weeks ago, Jez Humble sort of broke a two-year hiatus in blogging. Mm-hmm. He's a co-author of books like Lean Enterprise and does a lot of interesting research in continuous delivery and DevOps. Mm-hmm. Wrote a great blog post on the one of the inconsistencies I mentioned around bimodal IT, which is that small frequent deployment increases risk, which is a sort of common fear from people operating on these kind of critical mode one systems, whereas in actual fact there's plenty of evidence to show that it actually reduces risk. So I'd recommend reading his blog article and books. Also, Simon Wardley does a lot of very interesting research again in how we organize ourselves and has a great description of these multidisciplinary teams, which he calls a kind of cell architecture. Okay. So those two.
Thank you so much for your time, Chris.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.